To enjoy this episode ad-free, please visit us on Patreon at patreon.com/anatomyofamassacre or see the support link in the show notes. Anatomy of a Massacre discusses topics that might not be suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is strongly advised. On July 18, 1984, a 41-year-old lone gunman walked into a Southern California McDonald's fast food restaurant. But he wasn't there to order any food. Instead, he pulled out one of three firearms he had brought with him and started shooting everyone inside the restaurant. Employees and customers all became targets. After 77 minutes, 21 people were killed and 19 others were seriously wounded by the shooting. At the time, the massacre became the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. And today, it remains the most fatal mass shooting in California history. You know what happened. Now, let's uncover why. This is Anatomy of a Massacre, a Rockefeller audio production, episode number 11, The San Ysidro McDonald's Murders. Anatomy of a Massacre is a true crime podcast investigating the most notorious massacres in human history. From serial killers to mass shooters to genocides, there's a new story to be told in each episode. As a one-woman show, your support helps me to conduct research and assist with production and editing costs. As a thank you for supporting the show, you'll get early, ad-free access to episodes, personalized shout-outs in episodes, exclusive merchandise, bonus content, and more. To learn about how you can support Anatomy of a Massacre, please visit patreon.com/anatomyofamassacre or simply click the link in the show notes. Other ways to support the show include leaving us a positive rating with a review or telling friends about the show. Now, let's get to this week's episode. When Richard and Maurice McDonald came up with the idea of opening an all-American fast food restaurant, they had no idea their vision would become the McDonald's empire it is today. Today, McDonald's has over 39,000 franchise locations worldwide, and the company employs 250,000 people. But what the McDonald's didn't know was that one of their restaurants in San Diego, California, would become the place of one of the most heinous mass shooting massacres in U.S. history. A little before 4 p.m. on July 18, 1984, a 41-year-old man left the house he shared with his wife and children. On his way out the door, he told his wife, "I'm going hunting. Hunting for humans." As he closed the front door behind him, he got inside his black Mercury Marquis and drove to the McDonald's restaurant on San Ysidro Boulevard. San Ysidro is a town in San Diego, California County, just 2 miles north of the Mexico-U.S. border. After he parked his sedan in the McDonald's parking lot, he took four items inside the restaurant: a 9mm Browning HP semi-automatic pistol, a 9mm Uzi, and a 12-gauge shotgun, as well as a bag filled with hundreds of rounds of ammunition. He was about to go hunting. When he entered the McDonald's, there were 45 people inside. Many were customers of all ages, and a handful were employees. Within seconds of entering, the man pulled out his shotgun and aimed it at John Arnold, a 16-year-old teenage employee. Before the teenager could even react, the man fired a single round directly at him. But when the man pulled the shotgun's trigger, nothing happened. The gun didn't go off. John Arnold and the other 44 people inside the restaurant started to panic. There was about to be a massacre. After the failed first shot, The man took his shotgun and fired a single round into the restaurant ceiling. This time, the gun worked. The gunman then aimed directly at 22-year-old Neva Kane, the restaurant's manager on duty. He fired one shot, hitting Neva beneath her left eye, and she died within minutes. As the gunshots rang out, the customers and employees began screaming and running in every direction. Some tried running outside of the restaurant. Employees ducked under the front counter, and others ducked underneath their tables. But only half of these people would make it out of the McDonald's alive. After the gunman shot and killed the restaurant's manager, he again aimed the shotgun at John Arnold, the 16-year-old. This time, the gun fired, and John was shot in the chest and arm. Next, the gunman yelled, "Everybody on the ground." Everyone inside froze and got down on the ground. They did exactly what the gunman ordered. For the next several minutes, the shooter started pacing around the restaurant, going up and down the tables, shotgun in hand. As he paced, he began referencing to people inside the restaurant as, quote, "dirty swine Vietnam assholes." He started mumbling about how he had already killed thousands of people and he intended to kill thousands more. While the gunman was shouting across the restaurant, one brave customer tried to tackle him down. 25-year-old Victor Rivera lifted his head off the floor and told the gunman he didn't need to do this. He pleaded with him not to shoot anyone. But after hearing Victor's pleas, the man lifted his gun and shot him 14 times, killing him. After executing Victor Rivera, the man started pacing around the restaurant again before stopping in front of a group of 6 women and children who were huddled together. He first shot and killed 19-year-old Maria Colmenero Silva and 9-year-old Claudia Perez. Next, he shot 15-year-old Imelda Perez and 11-year-old Aurora Pena. Before turning away from the group, the shooter shot 18-year-old Jackie Reyes 48 times with his Uzi and switched to his pistol to shoot and kill 8-month-old Carlos Reyes. Next, he turned his attention to a 62-year-old truck driver who he shot and killed as he headed to the restaurant's playground. A key feature of almost every McDonald's is the playground area. The playground is a source of fun and joy on any other day, but not on July 18th, 1984. The shooter targeted a family seated near the restaurant's playground. As he approached the family, 31-year-old Blythe Herrera shielded her 11-year-old son by covering his body with her own. At the same time, Blythe's husband, Ronald, was doing the same for their 12-year-old, Keith Thomas. Like his earlier victims, the man showed no mercy on the family. Ronald was shot 6 times across his body. Although he would later survive, his wife, Blythe, and their son, Mateo, were shot in the head multiple times and were killed. When the first 911 call came in, the dispatcher accidentally sent first responders to a different McDonald's location about 2 miles away from the one on San Ysidro Boulevard, a mistake that caused law enforcement not to return on the scene for several more minutes. Another problem that day was that San Ysidro police officers thought they were responding to an incident where a young girl was shot. They had no idea that this wasn't simply a case of a single gunshot victim. They had no idea they were walking in to a mass shooting. The miscommunication among law enforcement allowed the gunman to continue shooting before the police could even secure the scene. This meant other customers arriving at the McDonald's for lunch that day had absolutely no clue they were walking into an active shooting. Astolfo and Maricela Felix and their 4-month-old daughter peacefully walked up for lunch. The family had arrived at the McDonald's and spotted shattered glass, but they thought maybe the restaurant was under construction, so they went inside anyway. Noticing the family, the shooter lifted his shotgun and shot all three of them. Fortunately, all three would ultimately survive, but not without serious injuries. Besides the Felix family, three 11-year-old boys arrived at McDonald's. The boys had ridden their bicycles there to buy some ice cream. Completely unaware about what was happening inside, the gunman shot and fired at the three boys. One survived, Joshua Coleman, while the other two boys were killed, Omar Alonso Hernandez and David Flores Delgado. By 4:23 p.m., a description of the shooter was broadcasted over the police radio. But until the SWAT team commander was notified, police officers weren't allowed to take down the shooter. For approximately 20 minutes, the local San Ysidro police couldn't get a hold of SWAT commander Lieutenant Jerry Sanders. He was at a charity event in Mission Viejo, completely unaware of the shooting. They weren't able to get a hold of him until 4:29 p.m. He ordered dozens of SWAT team members to the McDonald's within minutes. This team included a handful of military-trained snipers, tactical officers who were trained to shoot and kill with a single bullet. After the SWAT team was deployed, over 170 police officers from numerous law enforcement agencies arrived. And at 4:35, the first SWAT sniper team arrived and began taking their places on top of nearby buildings. With the SWAT team on the scene, officers were given the green light to shoot and kill the suspect if they got a good look. That's when the shooter made his way to the kitchen area, an area of the restaurant he hadn't searched. When he arrived, he encountered a group of six employees huddling together. This discovery angered him. After an hour of walking into the restaurant, how could he have not noticed six employees hiding in the kitchen? He then raised one of his guns and shouted, "Oh, there's more. You're going to try to hide from me?" He shot and killed Paulina Lopez, Elsa Barboa Fierro, and Margarita Padilla. Before he left, he shot and critically wounded the other three employees. At 5:57 p.m., about 75 minutes after the shooting began, the gunman walked from the service counter towards the drive-through window of the McDonald's. In a split second, 27-year-old SWAT sniper Charles Foster caught a glimpse of the shooter through the drive-through window, and he did what he was trained to do. He fired his sniper. The single round traveled 35 yards and hit the gunman's chest, tearing through his heart before exiting his spine. The shooter was finally down. The massacre lasted 77 minutes. The shooting left 21 people dead and critically injured 19 others. Only 10 people inside the restaurant were unharmed. The luckiest of everyone were the six people who, after the shooting began, hid inside the basement utility room. The killer shot 13 victims in the head, 7 in the chest, and 1 in the back. The victims ranged in age from 4 months old to 74. The majority of the victims were Mexican-American. While the police were busy notifying the victims' families of the dead, everyone else was left wondering, who was the shooter and why did he do it? The lone gunman of the San Ysidro McDonald's shooting was identified as 41-year-old James Huberty. But what caused him to walk into a McDonald's armed with three firearms, leaving behind the deadliest mass shooting by a lone shooter in U.S. history? James Huberty was born in Canton, Ohio on October 11, 1942. When he was 3 years old, he contracted polio, a disease that led him to a walking disability that he carried for the rest of his life. It was also something that he always felt insecure about. But it wasn't just the physical effects that impacted him. According to his father, the disease affected his entire nervous system, making him quick-tempered because of the pain he was usually in. In the early 1950s, James's father bought the family a farm in the Pennsylvania Amish country. But James's mother refused to live there. Instead, she decided to become a Christian missionary, leaving her family behind. Instead of moving to the farm, she started performing sidewalk preaching for a Southern Baptist organization. Anytime a mother abandons her children, there are going to be consequences. But this was especially traumatizing for James. Growing up, he had always been extremely close to his mother and didn't share the same bond with his father. So when she left, he became increasingly withdrawn. After high school, he graduated from community college with an associate's degree in sociology. He then attended a trade school to get a license in embalming, the process of preserving dead bodies. While at mortuary school, he met his future wife, Etna, a fellow embalmer. James and Etna married a few years later in 1965 and had two daughters. But their marriage didn't last long. Over the years, the police were called to the home for countless domestic violence reports. Almost all of the reports suggested James was physically violent toward Etna. In an interview following the massacre, she was quoted as saying, quote, "I always figured there was a strong chance he'd kill me one day," end quote. In the early 1980s, he was involved in a severe motorcycle accident that left him with permanent injuries, including constant tremors in his right arm. The tremors got so bad that he got fired from his job as a welder. But this was just the beginning of getting fired from jobs. Just 2 weeks before the massacre, he was fired from another job. Self-perceived failure became an early pattern throughout James's life. He thought he failed as a son when his mom left him. He failed at riding a motorcycle. He failed at holding down a steady and stable job. And he was failing in his marriage. Those outside of James's life also saw an alarming side of him. His neighbors and coworkers described him as a sad and irritable guy. He was the kind of person who would keep a mental list of all the insults he'd ever received, or a list of every setback he'd experienced in life. It was like he always felt the entire world was out there to get him. He also had a borderline obsession with firearms. On many occasions, his neighbors were frightened when they heard gunshots coming from his basement, where he had set up his own shooting range. According to his ex-wife, Etna, he often pointed his guns at her or their two daughters' faces just to scare them. In another incident, one of James's neighbors told him that one of his dogs had damaged his car. Less than 5 minutes later, James had taken the dog to the backyard and shot it dead. James's family and neighbors weren't the only ones who knew something was wrong with him. On July 15th, 1984, just 3 days before the massacre, James told his wife, Etna, he thought he was having a mental problem. After a little convincing by Etna, James called a San Diego mental health clinic 2 days later. On the phone, he requested an appointment to discuss disturbing thoughts inside his head. He was seeking help. The receptionist took his information so that one of the therapists could call him back. However, when the receptionist took down James's name, she accidentally misspelled his last name as Schuberty and not Huberty. Before hanging up the phone, the receptionist at the mental health clinic asked James if this was an emergency. This was common practice. This clinic is trained to take down names for appointments, but also to screen for mental health emergencies. But when the woman asked him if this was a mental health emergency, he simply replied no. He informed her that he had never been hospitalized for mental illness before, and to provide more assurance to the receptionist, James spoke in a calm, cool, and collected voice. Then he simply hung up. The call was logged as a non-crisis inquiry to be handled within 48 hours. But James wasn't going to wait 48 hours. The following morning, Wednesday, July 18th, 1984, was the day of the massacre. James, his wife, and two daughters got up and decided to spend the day at the San Diego Zoo. He didn't have to work that day because he had already been fired from his job as a security guard. The family arrived at the zoo for what was supposed to be a fun day, but it was anything but fun. During the trip, James commented to his wife that he felt like his life was pretty much over. And when she asked him what he meant by that, he referred to the mental health clinic's decision not to return his phone call. He told his wife, quote, "Well, society had their chance." After, James, Etna, and the girls ate lunch at another McDonald's restaurant in Claremont, San Diego. The family headed back home for the day. Their time at the zoo was over. It was now time to go back home and relax. But James wasn't in the mood to just relax. Shortly after they returned home, James walked into the master bedroom wearing a maroon t-shirt and green camouflage pants. As Etna lay in bed, he leaned over, kissed her, and said, "I want to kiss you goodbye." When she asked him where he was going, he said he was going hunting. Hunting for humans. He grabbed a bag full of ammunition and three guns from the garage. Before he left, he passed by the bedroom of one of his daughters and told her goodbye. He wasn't coming back. After he left the house, he stopped at a Big Bear supermarket. Next, he stopped at the U.S. Post Office branch before going to the McDonald's on San Ysidro Boulevard, a location only 200 yards away from his home. After the shooting, the entire McDonald's franchise temporarily suspended all television and radio ads for the day. In an act of solidarity for the fast food giant, the company's rival, Burger King, also temporarily suspended their radio and TV ads. James Huberty's family became a family the entire country hated. Although it was James who committed the massacre alone, the family received countless death threats, and the family was forced to move from San Ysidro to Chula Vista. The San Ysidro Police Department was also highly criticized for its response. Many were outraged that a massacre of this magnitude could go on for 77 minutes. Others wondered why police officers didn't storm into the restaurant to take the shooter down. But the San Ysidro Police Department defended its actions. Police Chief William Collender said that the idea of his police officers just storming into the restaurant to take down the shooter was, quote, ludicrous. He also added that his officers never had a clear shot of the gunman. He pointed to the fact that the McDonald's windows had been spiderwebbed by the bullets, making it incredibly difficult to see inside the restaurant, let alone try to shoot the suspect. But even with this explanation, many people remained critical of the police's response. At the end of the criticism, the San Ysidro Police Department announced they believed they handled the operation perfectly. They don't recognize any mistakes made that day. Within 2 days of the shooting, the restaurant owners began their building renovation project. Initially, they wanted to get McDonald's up and running again, even after all the bloodshed. But following discussions between the owners and community leaders, they decided on July 24th the restaurant would not reopen its doors. Instead, the restaurant was demolished and the ground was donated to San Ysidro under one stipulation: no restaurant could build at the location. The motive behind what happened on July 18th, 1984, isn't clear. We may always wonder why James Huberty decided to do what he did, but here are some possible theories. We know he was experiencing some type of mental breakdown before the massacre. Just days before the shooting, he called a local mental health clinic requesting an appointment. He also shared with his wife that he felt like something was off. But because his appointment request was labeled as a non-crisis appointment, he wasn't considered a priority. Because James never made it to the mental health clinic, we might never know exactly what he was suffering from. He also led a life that he considered to be a failure. He failed to maintain a steady job. He failed to maintain personal relationships. He failed as a son, father, and husband. And as a self-perceived failure, he didn't see the point in living anymore. But instead of just taking his own life, he decided to take as many other people's lives as he could. In his own words, he wanted to hunt for humans that day. During the massacre, survivors said he made comments like he had killed thousands of people in Vietnam and that he would kill thousands more. When these remarks were first reported, many people speculated if the motive had something to do with Vietnam or war. But that theory was quickly ruled out when it was discovered the gunman wasn't a veteran. Despite his claims that he had been to Vietnam and was a war veteran, he had never actually served in the military. So war or anything to do with Vietnam doesn't appear to be the motive. There's little doubt James Huberty was suicidal. His plans to kill himself began long before the massacre. According to one of his coworkers, James made a disturbing comment to him one day in November 1982. He allegedly told his coworker that he was thinking about committing suicide and, quote, taking everyone with him. His ex-wife, Etna, also reported similar incidents. According to her, after one of their arguments, he put a loaded gun to the side of his head. She was able to talk him out of it, but later on, he told her, quote, you should have let me shoot myself. This suicidal ideation may have influenced the massacre. Revenge might also be seen as a motive. Throughout his life, James maintained a mental list of everyone who did him wrong. He remembered every setback in his life and who was responsible for it. So the massacre could be seen as revenge for all the wrong society had done to him. Just hours before the shooting, James told his wife, quote, well, society had their chance. And on July 18th, 1984, he took revenge on society. James's ex-wife had her own theory about her husband's motivations that day. 2 years after the massacre, in July 1986, she filed a civil lawsuit against her husband's former employer, Babcock & Wilcox. James got a welder job at Babcock & Wilcox in June of 1969. But in November 1982, he was laid off from the company. In July 1986, Etna filed a $5 million lawsuit against both McDonald's and Babcock & Wilcox. She said the motive for the massacre was triggered by a combination of a poor diet and exposure to highly poisonous metals without proper protection at work. She claimed that during his 13 years with the company, he consistently inhaled dangerous fumes and that the company did nothing about it. She believed these dangerous fumes led to uncontrollable rage and delusions. Although it's an interesting theory for a motive, the lawsuit was dismissed in 1987. The only person who knows the true motive behind the massacre is the shooter himself. James Huberty was a disturbed and angry person. And on July 18, 1984, he decided to murder 22 innocent people and injure 19 more. At the time of the massacre, it was the deadliest mass shooting by a lone gunman in U.S. history. To this day, it remains the deadliest mass shooting in California history. If you or someone you know is in crisis, dial the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988 provides 24/7 free and confidential support for people in distress prevention and crisis resources for you or your loved ones. One more time, that's 988. Anatomy of a Massacre is a Rockefeller Audio production. If you like the show and would like to support it, there are a number of ways you can help. For a small monthly contribution, you can help create new compelling cases for the show, help fund research, and assist with production and editing costs. For supporting the show, you'll become one of the first to listen to new ad-free episodes and snag exclusive show merchandise not available anywhere else. To learn about how you can support the show, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anatomyofamassacre, or simply click the support link in the show notes. You can also support this show by subscribing and leaving a positive review. Sources for this episode include articles from the San Diego Tribune, History, Fox 5 San Diego, CBS, NBC San Diego, and KPBS.